Hello, and welcome to Bittersweet Symphony, a podcast about the bitter, the sweet, and the bittersweet of life for classical musicians during the pandemic, when the music suddenly stopped. I'm Cliona Ryan, violinist and member of the Irish Chamber Orchestra, and today I'm going to be talking to Iseult Cooper Stockdale, cellist and member of the contemporary music ensemble Kirkus. We talk about the bitter experience of the space and distance that was created in some of her friendships. Her sweet memory is of this sensation she had while preparing dinner for her flatmates, that life was just as it was in that moment, that tomorrow would feel the same, that meals would happen, that there would be companionship, there would be security, and there would be safety in that. This is Iseult Cooper Stockdale. I suppose I'm kind of starting by asking people what it was like thinking back over the last 18 months, and what did it feel like to do that?
It's so surreal. It's I'm very relationship based, so like I just think a lot about my relationships with my friends and my family, and so when I think about my life, that's mainly what I'm thinking about. And so when I look back over the past year and a half, I think about my housemates and also some people that I became like really close to.
Yeah. Where were you at in March 2020? And I mean that in every sense. Where were you at?
So actually, I would say probably a really bad place. I've been in London for 2 years before that and really enjoying myself on paper, but actually it just really wasn't the right thing for me, I don't think. I don't know. I just basically had reached a point where I think I was feeling a bit lost, traveling way too much, feeling really unfulfilled. And I'd actually made a decision that I needed stability. So I was like, okay, I'm going to try to move back to Cork even just for a month and then see where I want to go from there, but definitely move out of London at least for a while. And then after all these months of trying to get stability, then I was like, I remember just even the fact that I was facing into 3 weeks where I wasn't able to leave the city. It was just mad, but it was the best thing. It was one of the best things that's ever happened to me. And I think that that's like, it's really uncomfortable saying that because I realize it's been incredibly difficult for a lot of people. And I'm so lucky I didn't suffer any loss or anything like that over the past year and a half. But honestly, I think it redirected my life in the best possible way. Yeah.
Can you say a bit more about that?
Well, I mean, on a very personal level, like I think my mom passed away about 8 or 9 years ago. And the house that I moved back into is the house that I shared with her growing up. And I have like for a long time had a sort of reluctance about like moving back into that house. It's a beautiful house, but it's just always been, I've had a very difficult relationship with it. I didn't feel like I really owned the space. But when I was forced to just literally live there for months and months and months on end, I totally overcame that. And it's such a source of joy for me now. And that was the first time probably ever in my life I felt like that. That's the major, very personal change. And then just in terms of my career, I just honestly think like I finally gave myself a bit of space to like allow some creativity to enter, you know. And I have actually always been a very creative person, like it's been a huge part of me, but I actually think I became much more kind of my creativity became a little bit more narrow, I suppose, just because of the nature of the way that we're educated as classical musicians. I think you're made feel sometimes like you're doing something wrong if you don't want to be doing like a million orchestral auditions. And especially that's how I felt with the network of friends I had in London. Like I felt like if I didn't want to be going for all these jobs, it was because I wasn't good enough for them, rather than that maybe it just didn't align with where I was at with my playing or my relationship with music. And I just have a bit more confidence in knowing what I actually want to do, rather than feeling like, oh, I should be doing that. Is the reason that I'm not doing that because I'm just literally not good enough for it, or is it because I don't want it? I'm just having a bit more faith in myself, I think, as an artist or cellist or whatever.
The artist can be the cellist, and your creative life and your life as a cellist doesn't have to be two distinct ways of expressing yourself.
Yeah, I'm still so embarrassed, like referring to myself as creative or as an artist. I just feel like it's so, ugh, you know, but like, I don't know. I think like we should be allowed to take ownership of that word if we want, you know.
There would be a bit of shame or embarrassment around that for me as well. Yeah, I get that.
It's perceived as being a bit cringe or a bit pretentious or something, but it doesn't need to be.
Not at all.
Yeah.
It's funny, I'm struck by that thing of someone saying to you that what you needed was stability. And then the way that you're talking about your home and your relationship with your home and the fact that you see yourself there in the future, that's a sense of security and stability that you never probably expected to find.
No, and like I met up with a friend like kind of in the middle of the lockdown, and it was when I was going through this feeling of I now understand what it means to have a home. Like, and when I lost my mom, like I lost that sense of home. And I think I kind of kidded myself into this idea that I never needed to really find it again, and that I could, that it's a state of mind rather than the place, or that, you know, sometimes you actually do need to just cook a meal in the same kitchen for months on end, or like to sleep in the same bed for more than 4 days in a row. Like there was a period of time where like I checked in with myself. I was like, I actually haven't slept in the same place for longer than 4 nights in a row in like 6 months.
Did your kind of finding comfort and solace in your home, did it change your relationship with the memory of your mom, or did it shift that at all, I wonder?
That is a really difficult question. So I'm not sure I fully formed my answer will be, but it's freed up something, because the house is no longer kind of this frozen object, you know, it's now a living and breathing home. Whereas before there was a certain like staleness or stagnation there. And the house does have a totally different character now. Mm-hmm. Other things about the pandemic, I suppose, enhanced my relationship with my mother. Like I noticed that when I have more time, I cook a lot more, I bake more. I love hosting people. Like I got really into that the minute we were allowed. Even when we were only allowed to have people outdoors, I had this thing called the Sunday Cafe, and I would bake loads of stuff and then people would come over and sit in the garden. And my mum was exactly the same. Like she really incorporated that into her life. And obviously that was her way of showing love. And it's interesting how like that comes very naturally to me. Like, and that's because I've learned that as a way of showing it, you know?
And had you ever had the time or opportunity to discover that about yourself before?
I think not really. I mean, partly it was just like, obviously, when you're a student or you don't have much money or whatever, you're not likely to be living in places where you can have a big dinner table. The luxury of that, it's so nice.
And did the 18 months have a shape for you?
It did. Yeah. I think the beginning, I imagine it as a sort of a warm little bubble, because that was when I just didn't leave the house at all. And actually, when I was thinking about this bittersweet memory kind of a thing, I think my sweet memory would have been from that time where maybe about a month in, I was in the kitchen and I was cooking dinner, and one of my housemates was in the corner reading a book and the other was upstairs finishing an essay. All I knew is that the most likely thing was that this way of living was going to last for another 3 or 4 weeks. At the time, that's all I knew. And I knew that Maria was going to come downstairs and we were going to have the dinner together, and then we're all going to go to bed and all three of us are going to wake up the next morning and only see each other again the next day. And that actually gave me this like warm feeling. I was like, this is just so nice. Like, this is all there is to the world right now. You know, it's just the three of us in my house eating three meals a day together. That's it. And then things opened up a little bit, and that's when, yeah, I would have people over for dinner. And like I did some chamber music with Ashun Milne was around, Ed Creedon and Alan Janssen. So we started rehearsing every Sunday. Like it was hilarious. Like we always end up just drinking Prosecco and then trying to do a playthrough at the end of the day. It was really fun. And like, I mean, we had quite a lot of sunshine, I feel like, at that time in the summer.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah. So that like that was really, that was just fun. I really liked that. And then after that, I found it really, really tough coming up to Christmas of 2020. That was kind of a dark time. There was some work happening, but I had an injury. I had an ankle injury. So I was in this like big boot. That was actually a really bad time. I just felt so helpless or something. I think when I felt immobile because of my boot, and even getting to work where everybody was kind of like, I want to help you, but I don't know, like, am I allowed? All of this kind of thing, it just started feeling a bit detached and difficult and cold.
How did you support yourself during that time, or did you just go with it?
Yeah, I don't know. I did struggle a bit, I have to say. I mean, I got a cat, so that was a real source of joy. I literally got a kitten the day I went in for the operation on my ankle. But talk about codependency, like for a while. Like he was this helpless little creature who couldn't feed himself, and I was just, you're my only source of comfort and warmth. Yeah, but that was great. And I did go back to my therapist, like I go back to her every now and then. So I did that winter, and that was helpful for sure.
Yeah.
I did focus a lot on trying to be kind to myself. Like I had moments where I found myself being really hard on myself for not just snapping out of it or And then I was like, you're just being so cruel. Just be nice to yourself. You're literally trying your best. That was a real kind of breakthrough moment. I was like, oh my God, I don't think I've ever looked at myself in the mirror and been like, I'm trying my best.
I don't know if you felt the same way, but it was a kind of a relief in some senses. Just to be able to accept and say, I'm doing everything I can. And this is where I am. And just to allow it to be.
I know, you're right. It's just processing or whatever. Like, I've been feeling extremely unsettled. I've gone from living in the same place for an extended period of time, experiencing like contentment and happiness that I haven't experienced in a long time. And now, of course, I'm going to be fearful. Am I going to lose that? Because normal life has come back. I was thinking, like, during the lockdown, I would have every day my housemates, we'd always be like, how are you doing today? Because our whole lives were so boring. And I miss that a little bit, actually. It was just fun being able to work with where you were at, you know?
Not just going on adrenaline and...
Yeah, exactly.
So in terms of your three memories, you said about the sweet memory, you said it felt like this kind of awareness that came to you that there you are and this is our day and tomorrow will be the same. Can you say more about what that felt like or what that meant to you?
It was like a very sure sense of home. It was just like a sort of inevitability in a really nice way. And it's also just the joy of making a meal for someone and then knowing that they're going to come down and eat it with you. There's something really lovely about that, you know. And also we get veg boxes. So like the carrot I was cutting was grown in West Cork and like here I was in Cork. Like it was just all of that. It was just all so lovely and homey, I guess is the best word for it.
And then your bitter memory, Iseult.
That was the hardest one for me. And I still have no idea what I'm going to say, really.
Why was it hard?
I think the first thing is that the word bitter is, in the end, I decided to focus more on like sad, because bitter, I think, has a overtone of kind of anger or resentment. And those are feelings that I'm not that comfortable with. And I don't know. Yeah.
I think I see it like a kind of a sharp sadness.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
I do know what you mean. Like I said earlier, like my kind of friendships and my relationships are the kind of biggest thing for me in my life. And I think just because of the amount of time and the amount of sort of emotional shit that everyone went through, some people just feel almost impossibly distant now. And I'm sure, you know, hopefully there's a way of getting these kind of friendships back. But a lot of people's lives have accelerated in one direction or the other. And I'm really feeling that, I think, now, especially that I'm back in Dublin and life is resembling kind of what it was before. But I can see that certain things are just changed. A lot of things have changed for the better. But yeah, like there's certain relationships that I just don't know how to fit back into them anymore. And I think that that's time and distance and also just, yeah, people went on very different paths, I think, emotionally. Over the past couple of years. So I suppose I'm just fearful maybe of certain relationships that I might not be able to get them back to what they were like before the pandemic. And like maybe if we'd actually been able to travel and see each other at some point or just do normal activities together instead of having really intense Zoom calls. It's hard for somebody to just see you as your normal self. You're having to have this one-on-one, like, I'm doing well and how are you doing? Rather than just like going for a swim or, you know. So there's just certain relationships I think have suffered and that makes me really sad.
And is that something that you're like, do you feel an acceptance around that or?
To be honest, no, but I think I must find acceptance because you can't force these things, you know, they just happen. I just have a lot of people who I care for, but at the same time, you've limited resources. I can't be everybody's best friend.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's probably a bit ridiculous for me to accept. Like, I have a lot of friends from different periods of my life. I probably can't sustain them all forever, you know. But that's, that makes me really sad, you know.
Yeah. So there's some kind of relationships that were really important to you that this journey has brought you in kind of different directions and, yeah.
I think so, yeah. And certain groups have fragmented too much just because we haven't been able to hang out in a group, you know. I'm really sentimental about things like that, probably because I don't have siblings or a large family. So I put a lot of weight into my friendships, you know.
Yeah. And how was it to think of a bittersweet memory?
That was That was easier as well because I feel like the whole year was just bittersweet.
Was it?
Yeah. I mean, there's other stuff like I haven't gone into like a lot of sort of upset and trauma at the same time. It's like probably one of the nicest times of my life. So the whole thing has been this sort of haze of bittersweet, I think. But one particularly bittersweet moment I had was I had this like little mini house concert in August of 2020. So we played outside and everyone opened up the windows and everyone sat outside. And it was like kind of one of the last sunny days. And it was just lovely. And I got Molly O'Shea, she's a violinist, but she also had some training in acting and stuff. She was there and she was reading poetry. And so we would just play like short little pieces, like some Schubert and Mendelssohn and just like nice music, you know, like I just felt like crying every time. I could barely get up to like start playing it. And then she just read, I can't even remember what poem it was. We're so much more vulnerable to these experiences now because we've been so starved of them or something.
I know what you mean, that the beauty has a sadness or some kind of like, it touches something very deep.
Yeah. I'm not even into musicals and stuff like at all, but I was in London 2 weeks ago and my friend wanted to go see a show in the West End. So we went and like, you know, at the start, I was like, oh, what are these jokes? And then they started singing and I was bawling, crying, just sobbing. And I don't think that would have happened before. Like,
what is that?
Yeah, I think it's an appreciation of music, but it's also just most of the people in that room probably have very little in common, but they were all like singing along to the same bits. Clapping in unison, not looking at each other, but all looking at the same thing together with big smiles on their face. And I was like, that is so important. Those kind of experiences are really vital, I think, to society, for us all to experience something together, in particular if it's something joyful and even a bit silly or just like something pure, you know?
It's a communion. It's sharing something together.
I suppose, yeah.
What was your relationship like with music, with your cello during this time?
I think it was good, actually.
Did you stop?
A little bit, but like I feel like if I say to people, oh, no, not really, they're going to assume that I was, you know, working my way through like...
Popper etudes.
Exactly.
Doing unaccompanied Bach every day.
Yeah. I did do a bit of that. That was lovely. But I tried that, you know, I tried all the studies and stuff. And then there was one point where I was like, oh, I don't want to practice. And I was just like... I don't have to practice, but if I want to play the cello, why don't I just play something I want to play? Because I think in my head, I was like, Issel, if you're going to learn some unaccompanied works, really now would be the time to learn all those really difficult contemporary works for those applications in the future. Like, you'll have some recordings in the bank. And I was just like, oh, yeah. In the end, I just played whatever I wanted, whenever I wanted. And thankfully, I felt like playing a little bit every day. And like to notice that I still wanted to be around my cello even when I didn't have to be, you know, I was like, oh, thank God, you know, it's still there. I still like it. And yeah, I borrowed a Baroque cello for a while. So that was fun. I mean, it was mainly me just being like, why am I so out of tune all the time? And my housemates were just being like, please stop playing.
I felt like that with Baroque violin. It was like, I can play the violin. Honestly, this is just a different thing. I'm so sorry, neighbours. I could feel people walking past going, wait a minute, I thought she could do this. I thought she did this as for a living.
That's exactly how I felt. And literally just in the kitchen being like, God, it's mad how different the strings are. And they're like, we don't care. And I'm just like, that's why I'm out of tune.
But you're taking that a little further, aren't you?
I'm hoping to. Yeah, yeah, definitely. I really want to do that.
So you've had this incredible year in so many ways, recognizing how rough and tough and traumatic, and you've had your difficult moments with that as well. But it seems like there was a lot that you found that you had been looking for. So how do you feel about going forward? And here you are in Dublin, away from Cork, and you're super busy. Have you thought about how you try and carry what you've learned about what you want and what makes you happy? How do you do that? Do you know yet? Or
no, I can already feel it being quite difficult. One thing that I think is a priority is literally I'll go back to Cork because it brings me back into that headspace. So I think I'm going to try and return there as often as possible. I'm like, it's important. And I think a lot of us have acknowledged, like, if you're free to do some work, it doesn't mean that you're actually free to do some work. Maybe you really need those couple of days to just live your life and like see your family. If I have enough money to live on, I don't need to take every gig. I think it's really hard as a freelancer to accept that because you're like, but it might run out. But I need to say, like, facts. You know, if you've got enough, you also need your time. It's changed my thinking. Like I do quite a lot with my contemporary ensemble, Kirkos. I actually have a commission award at the moment with three other people involved in music. Like, I think the kind of conversations that we are having and the kind of ideas that we have, I don't know if I would have been able to access that kind of creativity, you know, a year and a half ago, because it's so removed from anything I do in any other part of music. And I think before I would have maybe made that less of a priority, or maybe not even been able to like tap into that headspace. And that has changed. I want to like keep that up. Yeah, and I know myself a lot better, and I want to make sure I continue to spend time with myself and do things just with me.
And then in terms of that sense of family, community, friendships?
Yeah, well, my relationship with my dad is the best it's ever been. I'm very, very close to him now, and I mean, that's transformative. And like, I call him regularly now, that never happened before. I'm going to try and go on trips with him. And then I suppose community, I haven't figured that one out yet. But I kind of love the idea of being involved in my local community in Dublin. And I don't know where to start with that, really. I think that's really important. I think it could be really exciting if we could start to build in like neighborhood dinners or like block parties or like all of that kind of thing. Like there was a lot of like Clos de Vedres had a concert on her road. Keith Pascoe did the same where he lives in Cork. A lot of musicians started doing things like that. And I was like, wouldn't that just be amazing if we could do more of that?
Did your relationship with your dad change? Do you think it was somehow because of the time you had during the last 18 months?
Yeah, definitely.
Was it?
Yeah. I mean, it was the first time we lived in the same city since I was 17. Obviously, my mum was alive when I would have been living in the same city with him before. And I grew up with my mother. So she was really like my kind of main caregiver. And I think it's very difficult to adjust, I think, after the loss of a parent. And we just had to figure it out for a couple of years. And I think finally, having so much time off and living in the same place, it gave us both the time to figure it out. I mean, I'm so grateful for that. I might never have been able to have that ever. And I got that. Like, I learned to cycle with him like a few months ago, and he's like an avid cycler, and just that is so special to me. You know, I was 29, but like we got there. My dad still taught me how to ride a bike, you know.
Yeah.
Next summer, I really want to like set aside time, go off on a big cycling trip with him. That is very close to number one priority on my life list of things to do now. And sure, that would have been the case a couple of years ago. Yeah, so grateful for that.
That's something that's really, really sweet as well, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, God, yeah. Actually, yeah. It was just so fun. Like the first kind of feeling myself start to cycle. And like, I could just tell that he was completely overwhelmed with joy. I have it on video, and it's really precious to me.
Is there anything else that you want to share?
Well, just thank you. Thanks. It's really interesting. It's good to be called to like reflect on it, because I would be afraid that we'll just kind of forget it ever happened, you know. So it's good to have this record of it.
It seems like this was an extraordinary time of connection and reconnection for Iseult. Connection with her mum, who she had lost, with a sense of home, both literal and metaphorical, and with the relationship with her father, which had suffered when they both lost her mum. If you're enjoying the podcast, it would be amazing if you could rate and review it, as it really helps people discover Bittersweet Symphony and share these stories more widely. Thank you so much for listening, and until next time.